welcome to The Big Question. We are here today filming at the historic and amazing Matrix Music Studio. And today's big question is all about cosmetic surgery. And joining me today, I'm so excited, thank you so much for joining me. We'll start at the end. We have got cosmetic doctor and trainer, Dr. Chike. We've got activist and model, Tallulah Eve. We've also got activist and model, Rain Dove. And on this side, we've got singer-songwriter, Miss K. Here today to talk about cosmetic surgery and the pros and the cons. We're going to start off at talking about cosmetic surgery. There's been a massive surge over the last few years, probably actually over the last 10 years, in cosmetic surgery. And one of the sort of pinpointing it down has been towards reality TV and social media and influencers. So I'm going to start at the end with Dr. Chike. Have you noticed a difference since social media has been around?
I think you're right. I think social media is massive in what I do. I'm an aesthetic doctor, and I see that really has pushed people towards, you know, what I do, which is non-surgical treatments, you know, so facial aesthetics, you know, Botox fillers, that type of thing, skincare. And yeah, that's been a massive driver, you know. And what I'm finding is that, you know, people are sort of seeing reality TV stars, they're more open about, you know, what treatments they're having. And, you know, it's not even in this country, you have to look in America. You're talking, you know, the Kardashians, they're the ones who've really pushed it.
They're the biggest.
You know, absolutely. Without them, you know, without them, we would, you know, we'll still be way behind. It's because they've pushed it forward, and literally people see it as something that they can aspire to, you know. So, yeah, I think that's been massive.
Yeah. And everyone else, when you first became aware of how easy it was to access cosmetic surgery? And
well, for me, obviously, because I'm transgender, it's been a lifesaver for me. It's given me the option to create who I want to be and how I want to look, you know, because it's always been my dream to be a woman. So having cosmetic surgery has given me that option to create that dream. So for me, it's been a lifesaver, you know. Otherwise, I'd have always felt like, you know, and so it's given me the confidence having filler. And I mean, I've had no actual surgery on my face. It's just been like, you know,
non-surgical,
yeah, like the fillers and the Botox and stuff like that. But I guess down below is kind of still a cosmetic procedure, right?
Yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Yeah. Surgical, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but down below.
Yeah.
And so having that surgery, you know, my vagina surgery, that changed my life massively. It gave me the opportunity to put F on my passport. And do you know what I mean? It just changed my life so much.
Is that from a mental health type thing?
Yeah, mental health and in terms of certificates, you know, a lot of people won't identify you as a woman unless you've had the full surgery. So surgery in general, cosmetic and just normal surgery, has given me the option to be who I wanted to be all along. And so for me, it's been a lifesaver.
Have you noticed that there has been a slight change in people's attitude towards cosmetic surgery? And when you were growing up, was it something that was very spoken about and you felt very confident to go and talk to people about?
No, definitely not. No one used to talk about it growing up. Mm. Like, everyone used to have like very thin lips. Yeah, like now it's like everywhere you go it's like you know what I mean? But like when I look at old
photos,
but we're naturally blessed with the bigger lips anyway because you know of our melanin and our collagen and that's naturally in our DNA. So but that's an interesting point.
You're right,
interesting thing because like obviously without stereotyping like black people naturally have like bigger lips, bigger bottoms, and like just more bigger everything. and now it's funny like how everyone wants that. Do you know what I mean? Like Kim Kardashian with the big bum and Kylie Jenner with the big lips. Everyone wants bigger everything, and now it's become like a trend. You know, our culture and our DNA has now become like a trend, and. Yeah, it's strange how it's become like that. Obviously, for me, it's all about my identity and my gender identity. But for a lot of people, it's to do with the trans. Mm. Some people, it's to do with the race. Like, you know, we're naturally, mm. we naturally have that in our DNA.
But going back to what you're saying, like, you're right. People didn't talk about plastic surgery.
I disagree.
Yeah.
I'm from Colombia, and while social media may have raised the visibility of injectables, plastic surgery has always been prevalent in places like Brazil, Colombia, South Korea. These places are the mecca of plastic surgery, and it would be very uncommon to actually find someone who hadn't had a boob job like I did. And this was back 10 years when Instagram wasn't even on the radar to raise the profile of these things. And it had nothing to do with imitating a race or anything. For me personally, and why I'm here is because I had plastic surgery and I've had injectables like Botox and fillers. And I got a horrendous complication of breast implants that no one spoke about at the time. And I didn't get it because of trends or anything. I got it because of my own insecurities. I would look in the mirror and I saw an asymmetry that no one would notice, only me. And it's in my head, like most of these things are. You know, you see the thing that you really need to fix, and then you'll be perfect, and then you look wonderful, and then you'll feel good. But it's in your head. Other people don't perceive you like that. So yeah, I think plastic surgery, maybe not injectables, were very, very visible way before any of these trends. I think injectables are way more available to people.
Because they're cheaper.
Because they're cheaper.
Yeah.
And you do see people like the Kardashians who have made it, you know, some of them, they look amazing. No one can deny that. Whether it's fake or, you know, real, that's a different conversation.
So did you have a boob job and then had them removed?
Yes.
Mm.
Well, I have
them
right here.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I brought them.
You were ready.
Yes.
What was the reason?
Yes.
What was the reason for you having them removed?
This way, let me tell you a story, because it's quite, I think,
well,
a thing that needs a bit of awareness around.
Well, I'm going to condense 10 years. So I was 19, and I went to a boob job, and I went to a surgeon on Monday, and I had it done on Wednesday. So it was a very quick thing. I didn't really do any research other than the complications from the surgery itself. So an infection, or, you know, they won't look the way that you like. You might not be happy with the size, and those were complications that I could live with and that I was well aware of and that I was made aware of. But no one tells you that you could get something called breast implant illness, which is your body simply cannot have a foreign object in there, especially not one made of silicone and something like 40 other...
So it wasn't discussed at all?
No, but...
Okay.
I've never heard of that.
Yes,
foreign, breast implant illness.
Yes. And I don't blame the surgeon, because a lot of them are not aware, because it's the manufacturer, and the way that these things are approved in the US, for example, they leave it up to the manufacturer to prove that they're safe. And of course, these studies are biased. They're only done with a couple hundred women, followed for maybe a couple months. And I started getting problems maybe years later. So no one is following this up. And we are millions and millions of women sick. And I basically went from doctor to doctor, neurologist, rheumatologist, ENT, cardiologist, and all my tests came back saying I was fine. But I couldn't get out of bed. I was suicidal. I'm sorry if that's a trigger warning.
So it's a bit of a mental health trigger as
well. Yes, but also very physical symptoms. So I had joint pain. My hair was falling out in chunks.
I've never had
it. It's crazy.
So you clearly had like immune response to that implant.
Absolutely,
that
absolutely. And... because I had never been warned of this, you know, I got migraines and I got vertigo. And again, just I got diagnosed with chronic fatigue, with zero markers, rheumatoid arthritis for a 20-something-year-old. I just thought that it's just,
this wasn't right.
It's just
but
so too many
But what is it
things.
About the implants that makes
so
your body
rejects
react
it.
Like that?
Yeah. It's a foreign object. So when the implants are put in, your body builds like a meat around them, a capsule.
Yeah.
It's called. And this capsule... is containing the implant, but you know, this thing is made out of silicone, which shouldn't be in your body. And even though my implants were not ruptured, the pathology showed that I had silicone particles everywhere. And this blocks your lymph nodes and it just causes havoc in your body. Your body doesn't want this inside of you, basically. Now, it doesn't happen to everyone.
What's the percentage? Is it like 1 in 100 people?
We don't know. We don't know because it's not properly studied. I know, for example, there are support groups on Facebook and other social media platforms, which is how I saved my life, really. I stumbled upon this group on Facebook, and the America group alone has over 120,000 women. And it was just shocking that no doctor had ever told me of this. It was other women that were warning others that this can happen, and I took them out and now I feel fine. And amongst us, we know that about 85% of us feel better within the first year, almost completely back to normal after taking them out. The surgeon who performed the surgery here for me did his own study, and out of 100 patients, 70 improved immediately after taking the implants out. Mm. So the problem is that women don't associate their symptoms with implants. Because why would you?
Yeah.
If your hair falls out or if you have a migraine.
What's the worst outcome from leaving them in if you've got this?
I know women who cannot get out of bed. They've lost their marriage, they've lost their family, they've lost their friend, they've lost everything.
From having an implant?
Yes, because they can't afford medical treatment. They can't work anymore.
I think the other problem is it's difficult to diagnose, isn't it?
Correct. Correct. Because a lot of doctors who might not be in plastics are not aware of this, like my GP wasn't. And she said, you know, the medical literature says nothing of this. And I was like, well, you know, a couple hundred years ago, we were killing people with epilepsy because we thought they had spirits. That doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. And now the FDA only 2 weeks ago has issued what is called a black box warning. You might be aware because it's also on Botox.
Mm. I mean, the thing is, like in my previous life, I used to be an orthopedic surgeon.
Right.
Okay. And we used to do like hip replacements. Okay.
Yes.
And
other implants have.
Yeah. So we used to put total hips, you know, metal hips, you know, we still do. But we learned over a period of time that people got reactions to this foreign body, and they get sort of metal ions, you know, from the implant in their body, and they start to become unwell. So it's very similar to the picture that
you're
portraying.
But, you know, but these are known, so people can be informed.
So it's an awareness
before
issue.
They get them.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
You know,
it's about that education.
Correct.
Yeah.
Say this can happen. Now, if you want to still get the surgery, then it's up to you.
Yeah.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you originally got the implants, like you were saying, it's a lot to do with your confidence and your
absolutely.
And then actually, it affected it completely the other way around.
Yes, it's an immediate boost. You know, you wake up and then you look the way that you feel and that you've maybe thought that you should look. And it's incredible what it does. And I felt the same when I had Botox, and I felt the same when I had fillers. And I remember my friend saying, oh my God, you look so youthful. What have you done? And you feel wonderful. And then it made, for me and for millions of other women, it just tanked my health and my life. And if it hadn't been for my husband and my supportive family, I would have absolutely killed myself.
Yeah. It can get that extreme.
Absolutely. And I am lucky that I have that support. Other people don't. So.
But I suppose one could put this in the same vein as, like, let's say you had an infection, you know, that got really bad and you need to have revision surgery, to have the implant out. So,
but you were warned about that.
Sure. So the issue is the lack
awareness.
Of awareness and something that needs to be.
I'm
going to
bring Brian into the conversation now.
I'm a person that likes to observe and listen. I like to hear what people have to say, and then I comment on one of those sneaky people.
No, we want those comments. Only because, looking at your Instagram account, you do a lot of activism towards people being who they want to be. In various aspects of life. Do you notice people wanting to have sort of cosmetic surgery and they come to you for advice, and what would you ever sort of say to them?
I have a very different outlook on existence, and it's a very personal outlook. My identity is that I am I, and that's because I want to be determined by my individual history and not the history of a Sam, the history of he or she. I want to be held accountable to my own existence. For other people, that historic affiliation of what has been helps them understand who they are now and who they can be in the future. I think it's very natural for people to have that primal instinct to be communal. And that's why we oftentimes want to conform or shift our bodies in a way that allows us to find a home, not just within groups of people, but within ourselves. There's this kind of comfort in being able to reflect what we believe is safety. I think when it comes to cosmetic surgery, it's been really interesting because a lot of people think it's a lot easier than they're led on to believe. I had a lot of, especially trans individuals on my page, who contact me and they're like 12, 13 years old.
Okay.
This is a warning that's moderately graphic, a couple of years ago I came to London and a young man tried to cut his breast off with scissors. because he was AFAB, assigned female at birth, and he felt like he wasn't, once he found out how difficult it was to be able to get the surgery that he wanted, he tried to take matters into his own hands. It's a really complicated situation. Everyone has their own relationship to their bodies and to the world. I believe that we really need to educate people on the actual experiences, because a lot of people glorify how great and easy when actually you don't have sensation in these parts of your body, or maybe it's harder to orgasm than maybe at first.
Oh, no, I have amazing orgasms. I don't want anything
But it's important for people to understand, but also to be able to make their own choices and to be accepted in those choices. And I think one other thing that's happening, it's interesting because humans have never ever before been able to be as connected as they are now. We used
connected
to live
to what?
Connected to
each other.
Okay. People with information
shared
so fast.
But somehow we're further apart from each other.
Well,
even though it's easier to be so connected, but it's all digital. Nothing's real anymore. It's not authentic.
But in a certain sense, it can be very real. We never have had this technology as humans. So there's this, I think that we're in this weird time where, for instance, face filters, that right there gives you a taste of what it could be like to change your body.
But isn't that amazing, though?
It's incredible, but
it can be real if you go to the doctor.
Not always, though.
And I know that's a bad way of looking at it. But
it allows people to explore themselves.
Exactly.
But then they have these tiny things like a beauty filter.
Yeah.
And what it does is it takes out little pimples, things like that.
Smooths your skin.
And it's when I was growing up, I knew that models were models. I would be like, they were like a whole different species of people. I had a better sense of self-confidence because I knew that I was never going to be that person. Now everyone has access to that Photoshop, that glassy thing. Mm-hmm. And when they have to look at reality and they realize that the photos that they have on Tinder have all these beautiful filters on them, and they have to go out on a real date, they have a hard time accepting who they are aesthetically, because they know that it might not be the thing that got them that date in the first place. It's because we haven't figured out how to apply this technology.
That's because we live in a society where we judge people so much based on how they look.
Yes.
It's nothing to do with using the filters, to do with other people judging you based on how you look.
But we think that's new. Because I look back on my childhood and growing up watching films, I had very much an idea in my head of what beauty was. And the things that I didn't conform to, I hated. And I actively, went out of my way to not eat, so I was tiny, which developed then a disorder through it. So now, yes, it's on social media, but is it not just a slightly different way of looking at it?
I think we're a bit more liberal, the society, and also there's access as well. There's easier access to it. Financially also, and this is the big thing, back in the day, I think plastic surgery was very expensive, aesthetics, but there's more access, it's more affordable, and it's, people see it, and people are looking before and afters, the aspirations.
If you're rich, you can pay to be beautiful.
Yeah, you can change.
And that's
exactly what is beautiful,
Well,
you can pay to look like everyone's desired type.
I think it's very, very interesting.
What
you mentioned about if you're rich, you can look however you like.
Yeah.
There's been studies done about how many people have put themselves in debt through trying to desperately look like Kylie Jenner.
They brought up some really good points. One is how affordable it is now, because this is another thing that they don't really warn people about, that is that if you get a complication, which you can from injectables,
you can't afford to
have a vascular occlusion and you will go blind and you could get skin necrosis, which your skin dies and you will never look the same. It is so much more expensive to fix it. To remove the implants, it costs me nearly three times more than to put them in.
Yeah.
And that is a financial hit that not everyone can stomach. And in the UK, for example, the NHS will 99% of the time not take them out because it is a cosmetic procedure and you chose to do that, right? And like brain setting is super important. They do portray these treatments as really simple, like super easy to get, and people need to understand that these things are, as little as they can be dangerous. And it will cost you more to fix it if you don't go to someone who has the proper qualifications, like our doctor in the panel here, and if you go to just like a back alley beautician that will do it half the price, you know, it's just about being aware.
And then goes back to regulation.
Yes.
Let's touch on this because there has been something called the Zoom boom over the last, well, during lockdown really, where people have been doing interviews or meetings on Zoom and have been seeing their reflection or that picture of themselves and deciding that they're not enjoying what they're seeing. So there's been this massive uptake.
But you know what it is? It's because of lockdown, obviously I fell in love right at the start, but I ended up gaining loads of weight. I went from being a size 10 to a size 14. I've managed to just creep down to about a size 12 now. But yeah, I'm looking at myself in Zoom calls and I'm thinking, you know, I was like, actually considering going to Turkey to have liposuction last month.
What? No. Curves are beautiful. That is beautiful. Curves are beautiful. Like,
I know, but sometimes it's just like when it's a sudden change, especially with lockdown, because everyone's been locked in their houses, they've probably not been exercising as much, they've probably been eating more, and our bodies have changed, you know?
You don't feel good in yourself personally.
Yeah, and then it's given us more time to actually look at ourselves. We're in the mirror and now more than ever before because we're at home all the time. So and you're bored as well, so you're there looking in the mirror like, oh, you know, I actually kind of want what Kylie Jenner had done, or do you know what I mean? So I think lockdown has actually been quite crucial for a lot of people's mental health and the way that we see ourselves.
I think you're 100% right on that. And as a result, there has been a 40% increase of people going to cosmetic
websites. It's been interesting. I mean, of course, it was a lockdown, so that we couldn't do aesthetics for, you know, two and a half months or so. And you're right that people have been at home. They've not been able to go away. All right, they've been looking at themselves on the screen, trying to work, finding out sort of, you know, things they don't like, or what we call default aesthetics, where they keep looking at themselves and they start seeing things that they've never seen. Okay, so coupled with that, with, you know, they've got a lot of time, you know, so they can research, they can do it, they're on their sort of Instagram, you know, so, and they're not spending their money, they're not getting on holidays, so they've got disposable income.
Yeah.
And so we've seen that translating to more people coming through.
Yeah.
And we've been quite busy from that front.
Yeah,
there's also been a huge rise in, you know, it's great that people are coming to you through the qualified means.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of ads on Instagram for people who are starting to do fillers, cosmetic, non-surgical procedures, and they actually have had no training because they can just order it online. And because you were shut for 2.5 months, there's been a massive increase in this as well, and people suffering as a result of it. Now, just out of interest, as influencers, do you think that's something that needs to be regulated?
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Completely.
100%.
I got an infection from fillers once because the practitioner didn't use gloves, for example. Something so crucial.
Didn't use gloves?
She did not use gloves.
And what was this for? Is it like
she was a nurse. She was a registered nurse and she forgot. I think at that time it was Botox. And I just remember thinking, surely she knows what she's doing. Yeah. And this is one of the things that I've heard before, and maybe you who have also injectables done, is, well, you chose to do this, almost like we deserve the complication, like, oh, why did you get the implants in the first place? And I absolutely reject that statement. You put yourself in the hands of who you believe or portray themselves as a professional. In the case of plastic surgeons, they take an oath to do no harm. And that doesn't mean that because I want to change my image, I deserve to be harmed and I deserve to be poisoned, or I deserve not to have the proper care, like putting your gloves on before you perform even the simplest of treatments. And I think it's a really important point because I see absolutely nothing wrong with getting these things done. I think it's wonderful. If it makes you feel good, go for it. As long as it's not something immoral. and I reject that we deserve what's happening to us, and I reject the notion that I looked for it because I had a psychological distortion of how I saw myself, or that I wanted to feel in a different way. We do not deserve this. I didn't deserve this. Millions of women don't deserve to be sick from this, and it goes with the regulations. Now,
there is no regulation,
and there isn't even regulations for implants, let alone injectables. You know, there's no big proper studies done in this thing that is considered a medical device. So in the UK, anyone can do a 2-day course and inject fillers.
I mean, that's the problem. Okay, so dermal fillers, you know, so your cheek fillers, your lip fillers. Okay, although someone is injecting into your body, it's classified as a medical device. All right, so you don't need, so actually, you know, theoretically, on paper, you don't need to be medically qualified to actually inject these devices, okay? So Botox is a drug, okay, so you do need to be, because it's prescription.
Yes.
Okay, and so this is where the issues come in, you know? The whole industry is just not, especially the non-surgical side, is just not regulated, okay? And so what's happening is you get people doing these sham courses, okay, and they're just literally injecting in the back of hair salons, and you know, no one knows. And of course, if you do something, you know, sort of, you know, if you've got a big following, so you're a beauty therapist and you've got a big client base, you'll treat them, you'll reduce your cost, you're gonna do it cheaper, people are gonna come to you. Over a period of time, you're gonna get quite good at it. Okay, so let's say, for example, you're able to get Botox, you know, from someone, and you learn how to do it, you'll be fine at it. Botox lasts you 4 months, you know. If you have a problem, it's going to wear off, you know. Say in 4 months, you know, 4 months later, it's, you're back to normal, you know. So these are the issues that we have, basically.
Do you see it as a bit of an addiction as well for people, or is anyone across that?
I don't know if it's an addiction, more like, you know, dermal fillers with time, your body absorbs it. So it's more that you have to maintain the look.
It depends on what addiction means.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, as you said, when people have had surgery, when they've had these, you know, they leave happy, feeling good.
Yeah, I think everyone in general is addicted to looking and feeling good.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, changing your appearance makes you feel good. Like when you change your hair, for example, you know, we always feel good when we do things, when we make modifications to our body. So everyone's addicted to that feeling of feeling good and making changes to themselves, some more than others.
Some people, though, they do have their, I would say that we have to be careful because we're in a Western culture and we have a very different idea of identity and self awareness.
Yep.
There's a lot of cultures that I've seen where people feel that shifting of oneself or even certain things that we would consider maybe to be like whether it's cosmetic surgery or whether it's even like cutting your hair, it's actually seen as desperation or something that's not socially wanted.
Right.
So actually there are cultures where people will either grow their hair, they don't touch their hair, they don't touch their skin, they don't do anything.
Like in Asia.
Different
type of beauty.
Different
cultures have different. Yeah, absolutely. The less that you do, the more beautiful you are.
Yeah.
Versus like in a fast, we're in a culture where things are consistently shifting and we feel like we have to shift with them in order to hold people's interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it comes down to is we're all afraid of not being loved. And we want to guarantee that. And oftentimes we try to reflect whatever we feel is going to get us that love. And it's...
often
it's,
self-love,
actually.
Even
self-love.
Yeah,
self-love.
That's the biggest
when I looked in the mirror before I got implants, it was me, you know, my boyfriend at the time, the only thing I needed. My dad was absolutely against it. My mom, you know, she was like, whatever makes you happy, but you know, you look great. So it was me looking in the mirror with me.
I think it's a very difficult situation when you get someone coming into your clinic. And I think this is where, you know, yes, regulation is important, but the teaching and the training of these people is very important. So as I said, I'm a trainer. It's really important to, when someone comes in, you have to work out, what is this person want? What's their issue? Yeah. And clearly, you have to work out some. Have you heard of body dysmorphia?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I have gender dysphoria.
Yeah, so you have to work out, like, what's happened to this person? Are they depressed? Do they have, what's going on in their life? you know, are they wanting this because they want to substitute, make themselves feel good? Because, and the issue is, you do this treatment costing, I don't know how much, depends, thousands, whatever. You know, they come back unhappy, not because of your work, which is amazing, but because of it, they've tried to sort of substitute.
The
yeah, the other issue.
Have you
yeah.
ever turned anyone down?
Lots.
Okay.
I do. Ooh. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So classic example. Classic scenario. Oh, doctor, yeah, I've looked at your Instagram. Love your work. You know, clearly they've come in and they've had other procedures. Why have you come to me? Why haven't you gone to your previous doctor? Oh, just want something else. You know, and then they show you a picture of what they want, someone else's face, facial
mm-hmm.
features.
Yeah.
And you're like, you talk to them, you're like, I'm not going to achieve this with you.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a totally different face, you want a totally different, you know, appearance. And so you start asking questions and you sort of, there's a roundabout way you do it. So how, you know, what do you do for a living? You know, mm-hmm. where do you live? How's life? You start guessing, you get to realise that something else is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Those are patients that you've got to be really careful. And so you do a sort of body dysmorphia questionnaire type thing in the history,
okay.
you know, so you're trying to work out are they depressed, you know, you want to screen them. For me,
that's really sad, isn't it?
Yeah, you want to screen
yeah.
them because you've got to treat the right patient, you know. And so those patients that give me alarm bells, I say, I've got different strategies. I'll be like, well, go away, think about it, so it puts them off,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then when they come back again, you're like, well, you know, sometimes you have to be honest with them. And some of them, if they've clearly got a mental health issue, you have to be upfront about it and then signpost them to someone else.
Mm.
You know, that's really important,
mm.
you know.
It's a battle, for I imagine, for practitioners, and you have to find a balance, because for
yeah.
someone you like, Tallulah, that you wanted to reflect on your outside, how you felt on
mm.
the inside, and you look great, and I think that, you know, when someone may come to your practice and
mm.
they have lips the size of sausages,
yeah.
you know,
that's when you
and that's how they want
them.
To look,
yeah.
then
yeah.
that's the real problem.
Yeah.
It's like, where do you draw the line that it's okay to do it to this person to reflect how she wants to look?
Absolutely.
But for you,
yeah.
I know that you also want to reflect how you want to look, but how you want to look
yeah.
is insane. It
yeah.
doesn't reflect how humans actually look.
Yeah.
So it's a really fine line.
It's
a massive responsibility
yeah.
as well,
yeah.
I think,
yeah.
for not only doctors, but people who are influencers as well.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think that's taking it back to sort of online and
mm.
social media and how
yeah.
this is affecting
mm.
and how it's a massive surge. I want to talk about the younger generation,
mm.
under 18s. Now, this
yeah.
week in Parliament, they have finally voted to put through, and I'm going to get it, the name right, so it's the Botox and Cosmetic Fillers Children Bill,
yeah.
2019 to 21.
Children?
Yes, which means that if it passes, it will be illegal for anyone under the age of 18
mm.
to get fillers.
Well, I thought it was anyone.
Well,
it's not.
Well,
so anyone, any age can have it.
Well, okay, so the recommendation is that, I mean, most, you know, you have insurance, and so they won't insure you for anyone under 18, all right? But it wasn't law.
No.
And that's the whole
mm.
point. This is going to be law. Or they wanted to be a stature
right.
in law.
Because
mm. yeah.
there was a big survey done, a big experiment done, where a lot of 15, 16
absolutely,
year olds,
yeah.
they were going into surgeries and
yeah.
they were asking to get these procedures done and not want to their IDs checked.
Yeah, they've done lots of sort of, behind the scenes kind of, you know, they've
yeah.
got young people to go in and see if this clinic would treat them, you know, and they would,
yeah.
you know. A lot of clinics often don't take date of birth, so they don't take ages, and they'll just crack on. Some will do it on the day.
You
know?
Don't understand. I think at that age, you know, I got my breast implants at 19,
mm.
and even then, you know, it's about informing the patient, but also I don't know if you fully understand the consequences long term of what you're doing. A child
yeah.
will definitely not understand, you know, like Ryan said, they make these procedures look super easy. Come to the office, 30 minutes, I'll get it done, you look amazing. And
yeah.
in 2 weeks, once the swelling has gone down, you'll have the image that you've always wanted. So they, you know, a lot of people make it sound that way, and it's just not. It's still a medical procedure that needs to be carried out by a professional.
Because there is no doubt that there's a difference between an 18-year-old coming through your door and 35, 40-year-old who needs facial rejuvenation because of aging.
Yes.
Right? We all have signs of aging. And
would
so,
you say that there? Would you say that there are? I don't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah. yeah.
Just. You know, I have a friend
mm.
who has a medical condition.
Mm.
The underparts of their eyes have really sunken in
yeah.
as a result of
yeah.
surviving
yeah.
some pretty horrific
mm.
Treatments.
Yeah.
they get under eye for it.
Feel that teardrops, yeah.
In school, you know, people really make fun of them quite a bit.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's some kind of gray area where if the doctor determines that, you know, for instance, something like this, that this person will likely be undergoing for the rest of their life, partially for the protection of their under eye, because they needed a little buffer.
Yeah.
You know, partially just aesthetically, if somebody's going to be undergoing this for the likely the rest of their life, is there wiggle room?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So the classic is the breast implant. You obviously it's not, you know, the NHS doesn't pay for it, but it may pay for, you know, breast reconstruction. Let's say if you're getting medical problems.
You're in a car accident or something,
so it's not,
there's cosmetic surgery that requires fillers.
So not for the aesthetic, but for the medical issue.
But will this prohibit people who are 15 to 18 from getting those medical treatments?
I guess that's the thing that I have to think about.
You always need parental consent for these things when you're under the age of 18, at least in any reputable place. But I'm still sure that you will find some people, just like they're willing to do back alley surgery, then we'll do back alley injections.
Which is our next topic. Online, social media ads, people who are not being able, let's say they're 16-year-olds, not being able to get fillers through a regular doctor, someone they've been in to see, so they go online, they see an ad for it.
But then why are their parents allowing them to do that?
Did your parents know everything you were doing?
If I was going to get injectables and went back home, my mum or my grandma saw me with massive lips like that, or any kind of modification.
Their mum might be coming as well with them.
And then that's why I said that it's something to do with the parenting.
Okay.
You know? I think a lot of how we view ourselves is to do with how we were brought up.
Yeah, but school is brutal. You have to remember, at my high school, you know, wonderful people, but children and teenagers are brutal.
I mean, the word is influence, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone is influenced, and school is massive.
That also goes back to the people that are bullying those people for having that.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to that person's parenting, what they're being taught at home.
We've all got insecurities, haven't we?
Because this isn't new, you know, bullying's been around for hundreds of months, forever, really.
Yeah, of course.
So it's then about how we then adapt it to what's happening and trending now. Before we move to the throne.
I was saying there's gateway fillers too, there's a lipstick, lip balm, you put it on.
Oh, the tingling one.
The tingling one.
Oh, I love that one.
Does it swelling?
It costs well.
So it's just swelling.
Yeah, but there's like the gateway.
There'll be one in 1,000 who'll get like a reaction.
Yeah, but still,
they irritate your lips to make them to send blood to make them bigger.
Do you know what? They actually don't do anything. At every photo shoot I do, they put this tingling balm on my lips, and yeah, you can feel it, and you feel like you've got a pound. But then you look in the mirror, and there's no difference Do you know what I mean? So.
But it's like all these machines that people will do to do, you know, sort of to lift and not to have surgery and, you know.
Short-term fix.
My alternative for liposuction was to have my injectables. I had fat dissolving injections put into my arm to dissolve the fat.
Okay.
And that was my alternative for lipo. I wanted something that was like non-invasive and wasn't going to keep me like out of work for too long, you know. So,
and again, that's one of the things that people are going to these things because you don't have the downtime.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, I advertise the, you know, I suppose the sort of, you know, lunchtime non-surgical facelift. That's what you do because you can treat someone in an hour. They come in with all the signs of aging. You do the dermal fillers. They're lifted. They're all, you know, contoured, chiseled. And they can go back to work. There's no downtime. There's no major risks.
So bring it back to sort of online and social media, in particular, sort of like I mentioned before, the younger generation who are being hugely influenced by this. You know, you've got the likes of Kylie Jenner, who in one story on her Instagram is advertising her lipsticks, and the next one is thanking her doctor for her fillers.
And then the next one, she's dissolving her fillers.
Exactly.
So
this is
she really?
Yeah,
yeah,
we did that over a lot. They're back again now, don't worry.
Yeah. I was going to say.
But that sort of normalisation of procedures Is this a dangerous avenue that we're going down to actively sort of encourage people to say this is normal behaviour? Or is it something we need to be careful about?
I think humans have had an obsession with looking young forever. I mean, we can go back to the Egyptians and they used makeup, you know, so I think it's such a natural thing. You know, we want to avoid dying, we want to live forever, and looking young, who doesn't want to look young forever?
How young is too young? Because an 18-year-old, should they be worrying about their age? Or younger, sorry, a 15-year-old, should they be worrying
about... No, but I think at that age, it's about looking desirable, not looking young. And so a lot of young girls are doing it to be desired by boys and girls, you know?
Do you think it helps when you've got the likes of shows like Love Island?
No,
I love
they
Love
definitely
Island,
don't help, but I love it.
Oh,
my guilty pleasure. I mean, if I was single,
it's
like,
but let's be real, most of us look at those shows thinking that these people are clowns and that you will never want to be them.
People think that?
You know,
I don't think so.
I don't know anyone who seriously looks at that show and says that's my
okay,
role.
Can I?
Really?
No.
See, I know a million
people.
Let's
hear a few things, because this is a really
interesting
topic, because there are both sides on this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I got a privilege to have a brunch with Kim Kardashian and some individuals.
You had brunch with Kim Kardashian?
Yes,
oh.
And we were talking about activism. And how activism was a part of her work.
Yes.
And she said that one of the things that she feels good about with her show is that people see that she has all these things, Louis Vuitton, Versace, you know, she's got like this glowing skin and makeup, all these things. And that at the same time that she's still unhappy and poor peers, but she's still finding, still struggling. And it makes people, she said what it does, it helps people who don't have very much say, I might not have much, but at least I'm not as fucked up as Kim Kardashian. And she says, I bring in that way, I bring light. So it's the clown syndrome. She's very self-aware.
To perceive it. Wow.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, a lot of people use them as a bad example. I think they're brilliant. I think you have to be incredibly smart and
very
clever to get where they have gotten. They have built an empire.
Yes, they have.
And if they can inspire people to look the way you want to look, whatever that means, without jeopardizing your health, then that's great. Because if you got fillers, you look great, you feel great, I see no downside as long as it's performed safely. But I absolutely think of some of these shows, like Big Brother, things like that, but you have to realize that they purposely put people in there that will make good TV. They don't put them there to be role models. So let's be real about that. And some of them, a lot of them, come out, for example, The Last Love Island, I'm not gonna name any names, but some of these girls came out and they were beautiful on the show, and now you can see that they've overfilled everything, their fillers have migrated, they don't even notice, they don't know the term, they don't know what's happening to them, so they go, they get more to fix it. So when I say a lot of people look at these shows and see it for entertainment value, not because they want to be them.
So I think that is a very valid point.
Yeah.
I think you're completely right. There's a lot of people who think that.
Yeah.
So on the other side, I think this is where...
Yeah, I certainly think that... because a lot of them, when they come out of these shows, they are actually major influencers.
Oh, absolutely.
They are major influencers.
Yeah,
you know, literally, they can go to your clinic and, you know, get treated.
When you
them.
Say major influencer, how many followers?
Exactly? No, not numbers. Numbers.
Well, only because, I only ask that because the number of eyes that are on you, it's difficult. You can't even go into a Tesco.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the voyeurship.
Yeah, and we saw when Love Island came out, a massive... like increase in aesthetic, people coming through for aesthetics, like without a doubt, you know. And so,
it's massive in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it didn't have the same effect in the US, but for example, a show like Love Island is massive here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of the comments that these people make on the show and things like that, and you can tell that their level of education makes for good TV, unfortunately.
Some
people see it as a quick fix as well.
Yeah.
Oh, no, of course,
yeah.
But, you know, well, their behaviors and stuff, I guess is a separate thing, but I don't think that we should be looking up to people that are chosen for entertainment for guidance as to how you need to look.
But you're automatically going to want to look like those people because
they're
the
chosen
people.
They're on TV.
But
so if I'm on TV, I should look like them. So the problem isn't so much, I don't think we can change where we are at the moment. It's just more about going forward.
The media needs to start picking more realistic people. Mm. People that represent everyday people.
I will say they are, though. Okay, I'm going to take a hard stance here and say that the new generations are fucking over it. They're over it because their parents are my age, and my age is probably the last generation that had to memorize a phone number. You know, like cell phones were a new thing when I was in high school. Facebook was a new thing.
Yeah.
So these new generations, they're wanting to do things like, you know, the good old fashioned. There's a lot more diversity on television. A lot more real bodies. A lot more. If I have to be in another free to be campaign, which please hire me. Yes, I will. But I will have to say, last year I was in four campaigns. Right. Yeah. All four of those campaigns, same slogan: free to be. Mm. Free to be.
I am who I am.
This new generation is absolutely, they're done with it. There's still toxicity. There's still sexpectations. Mm-hmm. But the amount of information exchange that's happening globally, we're able to cross borders without crossing the threshold of our bedroom. We're able to walk into other lives and even do it secretly, being able to step out of our communities and explore. And maybe it's not real as in like flesh, but you know what, people who are in transphobic environments can find a space
a community online.
Can find this, and we're melding minds and mentalities, and people who have been crying out to be called individuals in the past. Our movements, we've been like, you must treat me as an individual, but then we make the mistake of homogenizing our opposition or our oppression. But now people are like, I want to be treated as an individual, and therefore I will treat you as an individual and take you on as an individual. And this new generation, I believe, will blow us out of the water. Like, we think we're progressive, maybe you think you're progressive, I think I'm pretty progressive. I think in the future, I will probably still be, people are gonna look back and be like, you did good, kid, you could have done better. You know what I mean? I really do believe this new generation will have like, there will still be cosmetic surgeries, always. I think they'll be normalized and not demonized. But I also do think that there's going to be a lot more confidence in doing it for you and not for others.
Mm. You see that online already. I mean, you've got the likes of Lizzo, for example.
Oh, I love her.
Her body confidence online. And then you've got people like Chessie King, who she's an influencer online, who actively, she used to have an eating disorder and was told she was too fat to compete as a model and a bodybuilder. Mm. Now she's size, I think, 12 or 14, but probably not size 14 at all, but she's now been told she's too fat to do it. So, too thin to be an activist within this world. And she has made such an impact on the generation below, where they've just gone, this is what we need to see. This is what we want to have happening. We want to see people who have been through this emotional trauma that we've been through, or we're going through at the moment, and see that there's an outcome.
Mm. Yeah.
So, when it comes to online and as influencers, is it important that we are showing a more realistic side of life?
I think reality is different for everyone. So my reality is different from absolutely everyone in here. So when you say like real body, normal body, I have been told, eat a sandwich before and things like that. So I think it's important to have a balance, and it should be about health. For example, when it comes to weight, something that might trigger you to have liposuction, for example, it has to be about health. I don't think you need to go one way or the other. We know that it's not good to be too thin for health reasons, and we know that it's not good to be overweight also for health reasons. So it might be very controversial, but I am not on board with the body positivity movement when you go too much to the other end of the scale with your weight. And I know that it's a big struggle for some people, of course, to maintain. You have, you work, you have kids, maybe you don't have time or the energy or the motivation to come home and work out, or perhaps you're maybe.
Are we talking about fat positivity?
I don't really call it fat positivity. I also don't think it's good to be extremely skinny. That is, of course, another eating disorder that it's terrible. And you mentioned you suffer with it.
I just want to clarify this, because I'm really, I'm pretty passionate about this topic, and I want to make sure, because if my audience watches this, I'm worried that you will get absolutely consumed. I want to clarify. Are you saying that we should have more mental health support for people who are experiencing obstacles in their life, or are you saying that fat is not a good thing? Or are you saying that people should have mental health support if they're going through obstacles that don't allow them to be in the body that they feel most comfortable in?
And
but if somebody is fat and they feel comfortable and that is what makes them feel powerful and beautiful, there's nothing wrong with that. Even if you deem it to be unhealthy. If somebody chooses, you know, okay, I'm not going to go on a tangent. There are many cultures that revere fat. They see it as a beautiful thing, and there may be some risk with having a large amount of fat on your body, just as being really skinny,
of course.
So there may be some risk on the other side. But for some people, they know the risk, they take the risk, because it makes them feel good, right? Just like with any kind of surgery, right?
Exactly.
But they take that risk.
But
they shouldn't be shamed for consensually taking that risk, right? However, there are people who have mental health obstacles in their life, depression, socioeconomic boundaries that don't allow them to have access to healthy foods, inaccessible
gym
membership. Very expensive.
So are you saying that we need to provide more support to those obstacles, or are you saying that in general, if someone wants to be fat, that's not a good thing? Or if they're okay with
being
fat?
Support for the obstacles.
And more education needs to be provided. Not just for weight, but for example, I wish someone had maybe said to me, why do you want to get the surgery? And you know that having an asymmetry in your breast is normal.
Yeah.
You know, maybe had I invested the 1,000 or 2,000 pounds that the surgery cost into therapy.
You need to influence people in your life saying, you're okay as you.
Yeah.
Should you choose to or not to, I will love you.
But I wouldn't encourage someone to get implants, massive implants, which I know some women have out there, that will be detrimental for their health.
This is why social media is amazing, because you have all these different viewpoints. So when people come in for these things, they've got access to be able to listen to these viewpoints, and that's the really important thing. Because before, when I started, you didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were blinded.
They were one way.
It was sort of, I'm going to have this, I'm not. You've got viewpoints, and that's really important.
And actually, I think, kind of bring what you were saying there, is very similar. You could sort of apply what you're saying to surgery, to people who want to be fat. If it's their choice, it's their choice, it's their body.
It's about having the information.
I need to clarify because it's not about fat shaming. I don't think either with surgery, injectables, or weight, if possible, weight's a bit more complicated because there's sometimes genetic factors that play into it or conditions where you can't actually do anything about
My take
from what you're saying is like it's really important that you have the information.
Yes.
About gaining weight?
No. With any procedure, for example, with any cosmetic procedure,
so all risks are consensual.
Yes,
like if you choose to get those massive things, as long as you know that these are the obstacles you may be experiencing. And somebody says, you know what? I'm going to do it.
Everybody who goes under the procedure knows the risks.
I
think that people fool themselves.
You're about to be put to sleep and have knives put in your body and you think there's no risk.
But those risks are for an hour
People don't think about the lifetime. Yeah.
So,
like Pamela Anderson, she's amazing. And she talks about like the impact of surgery on it's a lifelong thing, but you don't really think. You think that your short-term gain that you have, either for through career or love or community, will outweigh those long-term factors.
Self-confidence. I mean, that's the main one. People have surgery for love, do they? Well, some people do. Unfortunately, some people do.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a lot of trans women and trans men who even will get like the facial reconstructive surgery.
Yeah.
And it can break your face. You know.
They do it because
some people have done this where they're like, I'm. It's not that I.
It
it's not really for me. It's
that
I want to have a loved one.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because it's like I wish what I would love is if we could all take away any of the fear of not being loved or accepted.
We could just love ourselves.
And then it's like if you want to do your journey, you do it because you're doing your journey. You're not doing it because you're afraid of ever losing me in your life. You know.
So what needs to happen then? We're sitting here, we're having this conversation as influencers, people who have a following, will come to you for advice? What needs to happen?
I think we have more of these conversations. This is like a great conversation. We need to have more of these conversations so that people out there who are deciding these things, like, it gets into their minds, you know? It's not just kind of, oh, they just look on Instagram. They hear other thoughts. It's
I think,
you know?
Don't be delusional when it comes to things like cosmetic surgery. Know your reasons for doing
it.
You know, like, if it's because of your gender identity or because, you know, you feel insecure about something, know your reasons for doing it. Don't do it purely because you want to look like something else or someone else. Or because it's a trend.
And if there's a greater conversation, there's more avenues that you can go down to explore it further.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Explore alternatives. And that's what probably isn't happening. People just see it as like, that's a quick fix. They're not exploring all the other alternatives.
Yeah.
They're not giving it time to make that decision. The decision is not a bad one. And when you get to that point to have a decision, then you should be in a regulated setting where you should be given all the information so that you come to the best possible choice for you, for your journey.
Yeah.
I think because our focus is the impact of social media and the things is influencers, I actually think we need to take the responsibility away from them, because a lot of them, the majority of them, are not medical professionals. There is no reason why they need to know the ins and outs of medical procedures. Even the ones that they have done, they'll be explained some complications or whatever, but you cannot expect Kim Kardashian, who is not an MD, to tell you the risks of what she had done if you choose to do it. You know, we cannot hold them responsible, I think, to the extent that we want to hold them responsible, because at the end of the day, it's your choice to want to look a certain way, and yes, you might be inspired by some of these people. I think the responsibility has to be in the people that provide these procedures. They're the ones who really need to inform you on what you're having done and what the risk is and how it can harm you or benefit you. I don't know that...
One has to be careful, because the person at the end, the doctor, can't be responsible for the social aspect that's driving this, you know, and that's a big issue, you know, the sort of, you know, you know, we've talked about gender identity. These are the things that are driving people, you know, sort of the social. We know, for example, let's say in the next 6 months, let's say there's a lockdown, et cetera, or the economy goes down. That's going to drive a lot more people towards aesthetic procedures, especially when people lose their jobs. The aesthetic, you know, cosmetic, it doesn't go down. It's the one, aspect that actually possibly goes up when there's a recession. People want to look good. People have lost their jobs. They want to look
depressed.
Good. Yeah.
And everyone gets in debt to look good.
Yeah, to look good.
Okay, so it's something to be aware of. Not taking, actually, maybe there's a thing around having a bit of joint responsibility. From
absolutely.
Better regulations.
Yeah.
Social media, it's not going to be all and end all. Influencers taking that procedure.
And know your reasons for doing it. Don't be like delusional. Know why you really want to do it.
Have that support there.
Yeah. Like, my decisions were definitely not easy.
Yeah.
You know, I had to think long and hard. I had to go through so many psychiatric assessments and had to face my family and friends every day. And I had to explain my reasons for my journey.
And I love,
again and again and again.
And I love what you're doing, because obviously someone listening to your story would think again. They really want to have this.
Yeah, and I think it's
that's
so important that you're
that.
Speaking
that's
about it.
That's all I can do, you know, raise awareness of what happened to me. I know it doesn't happen to everyone,
needs,
but it could happen.
At least if they go through it, you're helping them to think twice before going through it and going through with it.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to have to leave it here for today, but thank you so much for joining us and for all of your wisdom on this subject and your opinions.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back very soon with another big question.